This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the unrest came about after police moved in to try and shut down what they thought was a new sort of makeshift camp. In fact, what it was just a food distribution point set up by a charity, one of the many charities in the area around Calais.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, dozens of African leaders will convene this coming week for the annual summit of the African Union. And Kenya's opposition says it will swear in Raila Odinga as president next week.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story, dozens of African leaders will convene this coming week for the annual summit of the AU. This year's official theme is combating corruption, but as VOA's Anita Powell reports, getting the leaders to agree on a course of action is often difficult, even when it comes to a hot-button topic like the insult about Africa recently uttered by U.S. President Donald Trump.
Already one man has taken the limelight at the annual gathering of African leaders, and he isn't even attending. U.S. President Donald Trump's uncomplimentary remark about African nations has deeply resonated among the 55-member body, the AU's Commission Chairman, Moussa Faki Mahamat, told African foreign ministers this week.
Au moment où vos assises se tiennent, l'Afrique n'a pas encore fini de digérer.
He says Africa has not finished digesting what he called Trump's shocking statements and the hatred and desire to marginalize and exclude Africa that they conveyed. Such a statement, he said, coming after others by the Trump administration on Jerusalem and the reduction of U.S. funding for international peacekeeping operations, makes one think that multilateralism is in the midst of a grave crisis. He says the African continent cannot remain silent on this subject. This is the second year that the American leader raised hackles at an event meant for African nations to talk about reforming national institutions, restoring peace, and bettering the lives of some 1.2 billion people on the continent. Last year, it was Trump's announcement that the U.S. would ban visitors from several countries, including three AU member states, Libya, Somalia, and Sudan. The ban, which is still being challenged in court, has now expanded to include the Central African nation of Chad. AU analyst Lisa Lovaudrin says she expects to hear some pointed words against the U.S. at this year's summit, but no anti-American resolutions. And that, she says, is a key weakness of the Addis Ababa-based institution. The AU is built on consensus, and getting 55 very different members to agree on sensitive issues is a tall order.
The AU for African citizens have yet to show its relevance when it comes to, for example, intervening in peace and security issues and crises on the continent, which to an extent is the core business of the AU. It needs to intervene where no one else will and mediate in crisis.
Regarding the U.S., it's already clear the body doesn't speak as one. The AU's current head, Rwandan President Paul Kagame, smiled as he met with Trump Friday on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum in Switzerland and spoke about trade and cooperation. Alyssa Jobson, AU Relations Advisor for the International Crisis Group, says she'd like to see more action from the AU.
What I'd like to see on the agenda would be some of the crucial peace and security issues, the DRC, South Sudan, and Somalia, although I expect that these will not be on the agenda. I think we'll probably see them also tackling another crucial issue for the African Union, the institutional reforms that have been spearheaded by Paul Kagame.
That, she says, is the nature of meetings like this. Most of the action happens behind closed doors or on the sidelines. The summit of heads of state begins Sunday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Kenya's opposition says it will swear in Raila Odinga as president next week. Opposition leaders maintain that Odinga won the 2017 presidential election over the declared winner, President Uhuru Kenyatta. Mohamed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
Presenting what they call the results of the August 2017 presidential election, The opposition coalition in Kenya, known as NASA, says it has every reason to go on with the planned inauguration of party leader Raila Odinga as president and his running mate Kalonzo Musyoka as deputy president. The opposition group says Odinga won the poll by 300,000 votes over President Uhuru Kenyatta. James Orengo is a top opposition official.
If anybody had any doubt as to why Raila Amolo Odinga should be sworn as the president of the Republic of Kenya, if you go through this document, you'll come to the conclusion that truly, not only was Raila Amolo Odinga and His Excellency Kalonzo Musyoka elected on the 8th of August 2017, but Kenyans should go ahead and take the position which they have taken.
Kenyatta was named the winner of that election, but in a stunning development, the Supreme Court overturned the results, saying it found illegalities in the transmission of the results. The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, then organised a second election, which Odinga boycotted, giving Kenyatta an easy victory. Opposition lawmaker Godfrey Osotsi says electoral irregularities must come to an end.
We need to seek for electoral justice. How do we proceed now and in future? This country needs serious electoral reforms, because this kind of thing cannot be allowed to go on, because we cannot get our people to polling station to vote only for the results to be stolen.
The opposition leaders have refused to recognize the Kenyatta administration. Martin Andati is a Kenyan political commentator.
They are trying to make a political statement because there are still issues that are unresolved politically. The legal and constitutional questions about the elections were settled with the swearing in of President Uhuru. But NASA has got serious issues, electoral issues, questions concerning issues of electoral justice. But you know, those are political issues. So those are the questions that are now arising.
Tuesday is a day set for Odinga's so-called inauguration. Government officials have said such an event will be an act of treason. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Refugee and Migration Agency say the bodies of at least 30 Somalis and Ethiopians were found drowned this week off the Yemeni coast near Aden. They are believed to have been traveling in a smuggler's boat. Lisa Schlein reports from the agency's headquarters in Geneva.
Survivors say the overcrowded boat was packed with 152 Somalis and Ethiopians heading for Djibouti. They tell aid workers the boat capsized amid reports of gunfire being used against the passengers. International Organization for Migration spokesman Joel Millman says the ill-fated vessel is believed to have been operated by unscrupulous smugglers. He says they probably turned their guns on the migrants while trying to extort more money from the refugees and migrants. He says refugees and migrants often turn to smugglers out of desperation to help them leave Yemen.
People get stuck, can't get evacuated. We know of cases where they have solicited what we guess we can only call a regular traffickers or regular transporters, for better word, smugglers, to take them away from Yemen.
UN refugee spokesman William Spindler says it is not surprising that a prolonged conflict such as Yemen would expose vulnerable refugees and migrants to human rights violations, including trafficking and deportation. He tells VOA the UNHCR has been running a year-long campaign warning people of the dangers before they go to Yemen.
Yemen is one of the most dangerous places in the world. It's in the middle of a terrible conflict, verge of famine, with a cholera epidemic and so on. And yet, refugees and migrants continue to arrive there.
The United Nations reports more than 87,000 migrants and refugees from the Horn of Africa risked their lives last year trying to reach Yemen by boat. Aid agencies say the people are so poor they resort to desperate measures in hopes of making their way to the Emirates and finding work. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Police in Calais are trying to stop any new mini encampments being set up near channel ports. Yesterday, police used tear gas to clear an area. A 16-year-old Eritrean lost an eye and suffered a fractured skull in what aid agencies say was caused by more aggressive police tactics. Reporter Catherine Field spoke with me about the unrest in Calais.
The unrest came about after police moved in to try and shut down what they thought was a new sort of makeshift camp. In fact, what it was just a food distribution point set up by a charity, one of the many charities in the area around Calais, where they give out one hot meal a day to really any of the migrants who are in that area. Now, police say they are under strict instructions to keep the area clear, to not let any type of jungle squatter camp come up again. So they moved in. They fired tear gas. The migrants, most of them young men from Ethiopia and Eritrea, they responded and they threw rocks back at the riot police. Now, the young men involved, these young migrants, they have nothing. There's no point the police coming in and breaking up their homes. The more wealthy ones will have a tent. But they say it's no point the police coming in and just crashing around, ruining their tents, because that is all they have. And they say that they will just go there. They still hope that they will be able to get to the United Kingdom and that the door will be open for them there.
Is there someplace else where they can set up to feed the migrants and refugees outside of that area?
It's a very large area there, indeed, and there are other feeding points. But every time some of these smaller charities set up, they say the police come and move them on. And in fact, just at the end of 2017, some of these charities actually went to court to force local police to allow them to distribute food in that area. They say that you can't just starve these people. Starving them is not a solution, they said to the police. And the courts ruled in their favor and ordered the police to allow these charities to continue giving out food. On the other side, the police say, look, we are just doing our job. That since the what became known as the jungle, that huge camp housing thousands of people, was bulldozed about 15 months ago, since then, migrants have kept coming back, and the police say it's their job to stop them getting back there. Now, cast your mind back just 10 days when the French president, Emmanuel Macron, was there, and he said this has got to stop. There can be no more migrants sleeping rough in Calais or in the area around. He said Calais has to become a dead end, and if they make it a dead end, then he hopes that migrants will stop going there.
And on top of all this, we are still in the winter month. So what is it like there in Calais during the winter?
It's pretty miserable. It's an area that you get a lot of wind. It's very near the sea. So you get a lot of the very cold winds that come from the North Sea. So you get really driving rain. You get very cold winds. Plus, it's very flat there. So when it does rain, the rain just stays in the ground. The ground just gets wetter and wetter and wetter. What the youngsters in the area are saying is that all they can do is they will go into the woods. They will put up a tarpaulin in those woods, and that's just where they'll stay. They say there is nowhere else that they can go. Some of the lucky ones will go into a, say, disused factory or a disused house, and they can stay there for a few days.
Also, I understand that during this unrest with the police, that a 16-year-old Eritrean lost an eye and suffered a fractured skull.
Indeed. The local courts are now opening an investigation into this. During the unrest on Thursday, five migrants were injured. One of them was a 16-year-old from Eritrea, an unaccompanied minor. He lost his eye, he suffered a fractured skull, and he was taken to a nearby hospital, and he's undergone an operation. The public prosecutor in the area has now opened an investigation and is questioning police as to whether there was an excessive use of force in the clearance operation.
That was reporter Catherine Field speaking with me from Paris.
Nineteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The U.S. Congress has given itself until February 8th to resolve the future of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA. It's a 2012 initiative that protects immigrants from deportation if they were brought here as children. It allows them to obtain work permits and some other benefits. President Donald Trump rescinded it in September and gave lawmakers until March to decide what to do with the DACA program. Some Republican lawmakers want to end DACA for good, saying that the children of illegal immigrants should not benefit from their parents' crime. Most Democrats favor making the program permanent. It's a confusing and fearful time for many of the estimated 800,000 DACA recipients or Dreamers. VOA's Adam Phillip asked two Dreamers in the New York area about their experience.
Mohammed Kaba was born in the Ivory Coast. When he was small, his dad went to New York to study, then chose to overstay his visa and settle in the United States. Kaba's mother joined him a few years later while Kaba stayed behind. His parents promised they'd send for him when they could.
Back home, everybody in my neighborhood called me American boy, American boy.
Once he got here, Kaba easily adjusted to school and got good grades. But he was unaware that because of his immigration status, he wasn't technically an American boy at all. One day, a high school guidance advisor who was helping him apply for colleges asked him to bring his Social Security card to school. When he went home, his mother told him he didn't have one.
I was like, what? Are you serious? So I asked her, oh, where's my green card? She's like, you don't have that. I mean, the emotion was really tough. It was rough because that's when I became aware of what it means to be un-American at that moment.
Kaba got a job washing cars. It took him several years to save the money to pay for college. He remembers how stressed and angry he was, especially at his parents.
But I guess years later on, I realized maybe they didn't know about the system, right? And I think that's when I started to realize, okay, maybe I'm being a little too hard on them.
Kaba was hesitant to apply for DACA status when President Barack Obama began the program in 2012. He worried that the personal information required might be used to locate him for arrest and deportation later on. Later, Kaba became an immigration activist and is no longer concerned. He just wants what he calls full access to the American dream for himself and other dreamers.
Because at the end of the day, if we have access, it only helped benefit America. This country, in many ways, if you look at the history, it was founded by immigrants, right? And regardless what the president do in Washington, this country is part of my identity. I still am American. The president may have the ability to take away me working in the United States illegally, but the dream of Mohammed Kaba will continue no matter what.
Guadalupe Vidal is 32 years old. She was barely 7 when she left her grandmother's home in Mexico and was smuggled to the U.S. alone. Vidal took that perilous journey to be with her mother, who had entered the U.S. illegally with her father the previous year.
That love for my mom, for wanting to see her, for wanting to be with her, it's basically what brought me here.
Because Vidal and her parents didn't have valid immigration visas, they remained outside the American mainstream without many of the benefits enjoyed by citizens. As a young adult, Vidal could not get a work permit before DACA was created. This meant she couldn't make the college tuition money she desperately wanted or get health insurance through a job. But then the DACA program kicked in.
Honestly, it was a blessing to me.
Vidal says she's hurt by President Trump's decision last September to end the DACA program.
I just didn't understand it. Like, and I say, like, why can't he just let it be? Like, have this law continue? Like, to us, this is our country. This is the only country that we know. Like, what are we supposed to do? We're going to school. We're working. We abide by the laws. We are good people. We help each other. We help others. What more do you want us to do to prove ourselves that we are worthy of being Americans or good citizens of the United States?
Her life these days is a mix of frustration and fear.
I'm still in college, but what am I going to do after that? I'm going to lose my job. I'm not going to be able to provide for myself, neither help my family. I worry about my mom and my dad. My mom, she doesn't have DACA. She's undocumented. She's hiding. And that's going to be me later on.
For now, the legal status of Dreamers remains in limbo while lawmakers consider their next move. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Mo Melinda Gates has launched a high-level international commission to spark new thinking on how developing countries can best harness new technologies to reduce poverty. The wife of Microsoft founder and philanthropist Bill Gates spoke at the launch of the commission in Nairobi yesterday. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
The 11-member commission aims to produce use of technology to fight poverty across Africa and provide opportunities for the poor. Melinda Gates, co-founder of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, said the newly launched commission will create opportunities for everyone.
Let's unleash the opportunity here of all the amazing entrepreneurs, because they're the ones, the markets will then scale these great ideas. And so we want to make sure that as part of this work, we're thinking about everybody, not just the people in the capital cities.
The commission will be co-chaired by Mrs. Gates, former Indonesian Finance Minister Sri Mulyani Indrawati, and Zimbabwean philanthropist Strive Masiwa. The team, with the help of researchers, will deliberate new ideas like robotics, 3D printing, nanotechnology, and blockchain to reduce poverty. They will also push for policy recommendations to help government navigate the ever-changing technology. According to the United Nations, half of the world's poorest people live in Africa, and by 2030, about 400 million people in Africa will be poor. The United Nations estimates 10 million people in Africa every year enter the job market. Experts note the continent needs more economic growth and employment to bring poverty down. Strive Masiwa, who is founder of Econet Group, a telecommunications company, says Africa will have to create a better environment to benefit from the opportunities presented by technology.
If we create the right incentives, we can begin to create African venture capitalists who support entrepreneurs on the ground. But they will require incentives. The entrepreneurs themselves need support. We need to open our markets, constantly deregulate. Deregulation must be a continuous process.
The everyday use of technology has spread in Africa, marked by an increase in mobile money banking and greater use of the internet. But some experts question whether this progress has enhanced economic growth and improved people's lives. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In a strong defense of his America First policies, U.S. President Donald Trump has told a gathering of global business and political luminaries that the world will benefit from U.S. economic power and invited them to join him. When the United States grows, so does the world, he said in a 15-minute speech to the closing session of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. The president said that American prosperity has created countless jobs around the globe, and the drive for excellence, creativity, and innovation in the United States has led to important discoveries that help people everywhere live more prosperous and healthier lives. America, he said, is open for business, and we are competitive once again. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in. feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.